This episode is brought to you by LifeLock. It's tax season, and we're all a bit tired of numbers. But here's one you need to hear. $16.5 billion. That's how much the IRS flagged for possible identity fraud last year. Now here's a good number. 100 million. That's how many data points LifeLock monitors every second. If your identity is stolen, they'll fix it, guaranteed. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/podcast. Terms apply.
News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Thanks so much for being here. It's going to be an exciting day. I know it looks like they're going to undock the SpaceX crew and return them after 9 months back to Earth, my favorite planet. That should be great. That'll happen, I guess, at 12:45 today. That'll be nice. And the vice president's going to have a big speech. He delivers remarks at the third American Dynamism Summit. They try to be cutting edge with the 78-year-old administration. They try to stay with Bitcoin. They're trying to stay up when it comes to cryptocurrency, obviously, as well as staying up with everything else that's going on and trying to stay cutting edge. Also, we are going to be following the breaking news because the President of the United States at some point today is going to be having a very consequential phone call, which brings me to the big three.
Number three.
We'll see if Russia will go to a ceasefire unconditionally. I think the President's got options here to apply some real pressure to Russia to get them to comply to an unconditional ceasefire.
Yeah, I hope so. Russia, Ukraine, Putin, Trump talk today. At stake, the Ukraine peace, a ceasefire. Ukraine's already agreed. Russia suddenly says, yeah, I agree in principle, but I have demands. Really?
Number two.
President Trump has made it clear Hamas, the Houthis, Iran, all those who seek to terrorize not just Israel, but also the United States of America, will see a price to pay. All hell will break loose.
Yes, Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary, Houthi, Hamas, and Iran. Trump links them all as the administration reaches a breaking point over the unrest and targeting of American forces in the region as the IDF resumes attacks in Gaza for the first time in months. We have the latest.
Number one.
We know that Alvin Bragg dismissed many of those cases of the students last summer in Hamilton Hall who had taken it over and briefly detained some of these janitors. Those cases could have been prosecuted locally and should have been.
Fighting back. The two janitors, Harness, harassed and detained by students over the fighting back now against the university who have not stood up for them and have not stood up for Mahmoud Khalil, who is in a Louisiana detention center. He's an ICE violator. And the student pro-Palestinian maniacs are continuing to rally on his behalf. You got to wonder, who are these people that Columbia is letting into their college? They took over Hamilton Hall, and they have never stopped their anti-American behavior. You know how American kids would love to go to an Ivy League school? You know how many kids we all know that at 105 average, great marks in the SATs, but just don't qualify? And then you let in all these others from Syria, the refugees from the middle of the Palestinian situation. They're coming over American kids, and they don't try to blend in. You know what they try to do? They try to stand out and speak out against the country's best interests in our foreign policy. We better be able to get rid of them. First off, over the weekend, these El Salvadorian flights is front and center. This judge, James Broberg, decides, I don't think it's okay for you to send 261 known terrorists with TDA as well as MS-13 to El Salvador. So I want you to turn the plane around. Said, no, it's already gone. Lands in El Salvador, they unload, we see all the video. A great deterrent to the next group. We want to get those flights up again. But now the judge says, no, I want to see you, and I got questions for you. Here's a question. How many planes departed the United States Saturday? How many people did that in that category were on each plane, the category of a terrorist? What foreign country or countries did these planes go to? What time did these planes take off? And they got to look at FlightAware and see if they actually could have stopped them. Not only do I want this judge off this case, No longer should I have a district judge deciding America's foreign policy, number one. Number two is I want more flights to go. I want more of these terrorists out of the country. It's okay for 8 million to come in, many of which have evil intentions here, but it's not okay to get rid of them. It's nuts. So, by the way, is it any mystery to you who's supporting, who brought this case forward, the ACLU and Democracy Forward? Who supports Democracy Forward? George Soros' Open Society Foundation. They're going to waste all their time to get another court injunction to try to stop the foreign policy and the domestic policy of Donald Trump. It's sickening. It's absolutely sickening. So I really want to the president to win out on this. I think the whole country should. And for Democrats to stand up and speak out against and for these illegal immigrants that became terrorists or terrorists when they became illegal immigrants is crazy. Here's Chris Swecker, the former assistant FBI director, on what's going on these campuses and what's going on with these illegal immigrants. Cut four.
These cases, and when I say these cases, the activities on these campuses that are federally subsidized, if you will, have been grossly under-investigated over the last 4 years.
That's right.
You know, it's bad enough that people travel interstate and to come to a campus and block access to Jewish students. They kidnap or confine people inside the buildings, damage the buildings, block public access, block roads. But if they travel interstate to do that, and if they're financed by a foreign terrorist organization, which I think is what you're referring to,
that's right.
Under a federal statute, they can get 20 years in prison. The only thing I'm saying here is these cases need to be fully investigated, and we need to find out who's financing this, because this is a very serious crime. They're demonstrating on behalf of Hamas.
Right, and that's what they're talking about, tapping in these college campuses. You have the professor from Brown who went over to celebrate the death, not celebrate, to recognize the death of Nasrallah, the leader of Hezbollah. And she's just been told pretty much get out of the country, go back to Lebanon. Congressman Ro Khanna joins us, the Democrat from California, is on Armed Services Oversight and Government Reform. Congressman, welcome.
Thanks
so much for the time. I know you had a million interviews today or a million things to do in New York City today.
Well, I appreciate it. I appreciated being on Fox and Friends this morning and always enjoy coming on.
Yeah, Congressman, first off, where do you stand on what's happening in these college campuses? I imagine as you step back, it's happening all over. We know in California, too, with these uproar for the Palestinian, for Hamas causes. Where do you guys stand with this?
Well, look, first, obviously, if someone is celebrating Nasrallah, that's just ignorant. I mean, I think it was one of the best things that Nasrallah was killed. I mean, he obviously was a terrorist. But I am also a believer in free speech. And so the question to me is, is there a process? Is there a due process that people are getting? And are they actually violating laws? In which case, if they've broken the law, obviously they should be deported. But if they haven't broken the law, they should have due process.
How do you feel about the Brown professor? That's who you're talking about. And basically they said, just go back to Lebanon.
Well, I think that she should. It depends what she did. I mean, the facts here matter. But if she is engaged in just speech, that's protected. The First Amendment just doesn't cover citizens. It covers every person. We have the most robust tradition. If she did things, though, that are a violation of American law, then she should be deported. She should have a hearing about that.
Does it concern you all these anti-Semitic riots that have taken place in protests over the last 2 years?
Yes, of course. I mean, look, I represent Silicon Valley. One of the things I tell Americans in other parts of the country is you wouldn't have your iPhone if it weren't for our relationship with Israel. A lot of the technology that we enjoy as Americans comes because of the robust partnership we have with tech companies in Israel. And of course, there's a moral alliance with Israel. So in my view, that some of the criticisms of Netanyahu, which is a legitimate free speech, have often go over into an anti-Semitism that I have condemned.
Yeah. Okay. Let's talk about with that movie party, because we only have a few minutes in to the bottom of the hour. So I was shocked that people were that mad at Chuck Schumer over the weekend. And here's why. He really had. We saw this so many times with Republicans. You only have so much power. So you want to shut down the government? Or do you want to say, OK, I'll give you this one on the CR and then maybe try to do regular order of business in September? I didn't think he had any options. Do you think he had options?
I think people wanted to see him negotiate more, get one or two concessions, just bring Trump and Musk in for some negotiation to say, OK, we're going to stop, for example, firing veterans who went to Iraq or Afghanistan. That was one of the things I made this case directly to Elon. I said, okay, you've got a veteran. They've gone to Iraq. They've gone to Afghanistan. They're at the Park Service. who cares if they're 60% efficient? I mean, there's some people who serve the country. They're doing jobs. Don't go after them. And I think we should have gotten some concessions.
So that would have been something. Because, for example, with the Veterans Administration, I had Congressman Collins on.
Yeah.
He's the FDA chair. And he said, Brian, the agency is too big. We're about 80,000 overstaffed. And I said, well, how's that going to make you more efficient? He goes, it absolutely will make us more efficient. He goes, we have a whole – it's not haphazard how we're doing it. And I just did not know how many veterans actually work for the VA.
Well, it's not – some of the veterans who are being fired work for the Park Service. They work for
– Well, then that's interior.
That's interior. So my point is – and maybe Musk and Trump agree or disagree, and maybe they don't know – is – I think if you wore the uniform this country, and especially if you've been in combat in Iraq, in Afghanistan, and you have a federal job, you should have
or
some
at least a further evaluation.
A further evaluation, yeah. Some benefit of the doubt in terms of not being fired. You've done a lot. And I guess my view is have come to Congress at least on veterans. I initially was one of the few people who said, you know, I was open. Obviously, there's waste and fraud and abuse in government, and we need to find a rational plan of making it more effective and efficient. But work with Congress on it and do it in a rational way.
Congressman, tell me if this is not a problem. Just the same thing when closing up bases.
Yeah.
So I want to cut bait. I want to cut Congress. We got to get lean out.
Yeah.
But
you're from cutting some bases?
No, but how about this? Yeah. But if I represent a base, so yeah. I might be the biggest cost cutter.
Yeah.
But the people that put me in office go work at that base. And if I have to cut that base, I'm probably not going to stay in office. Don't you think in things – that's just an example. That's why you need someone on the outside to go in and look at hard numbers and lean out as an organization and not worry about the constituency of an individual congressman, Republican or Democrat. That's why I think an outside organization – like which DOGE has turned out to be, is so perfect to do this.
Sure.
Because they're not worried about elections.
Look, I get that you need an outside agency. I don't have a problem with someone coming and taking a look. But we are a messy democracy, unlike China. And so ultimately, you need Congress. You know who did it? Actually, Bill Clinton and Newt Gingrich came together in 1994 to pass the Reinventing Government Act. It eliminated 350,000 federal positions. So if you're that confident, I've made this case directly to Elon, who I've known for 15 years. I said, if you're that confident in what you found, come to Congress, come to the American people, force an up or down vote. And
But on everything?
Not on everything.
Do you go on Doge.com? I mean, do you see anything there that makes you think that they're padding the stats or making things up or exaggerating? It seems to be hard and fast programs that exist or don't exist. We're cutting this. We're cutting that. We don't need this. We don't need that.
Well, the two places I have the biggest problems is the firing of the veterans. But the other place is the Social Security, right? There are 20 million people in a database who've been identified as over 100. Elon is correct about that. Trump's correct about that. But they haven't been getting Social Security checks. That has been about 44,000 people. Now, if you came to the American people and said, look, it's ridiculous that in 2025 we have databases that have misidentified 20 million people, fine. But don't convey that somehow 20 million people right. are getting false checks.
True. Checks. But you could do that. But I understand if you don't want to cut benefits and nobody does. And we know it's going bankrupt in, 10 years, Social Security, in the current situation. But to go in there and get rid of the dead people or people that don't deserve it or the people, families are getting paid even though the recipient has passed away, no one would argue with that.
No, and it's 44,000 folks, which is 1%, which should be cut. But don't mislead people to thinking you're going to make Social Security solvent because you think that there are 20 million people there.
Would you be misled or were they just saying to show you how inefficient it is? Maybe 44,000 are getting checks unnecessarily, but to show you how inefficient it is people in the system who are 182 years old.
Absolutely. And if Elon were to come and say the technology is out of date of the federal government and I want to update that, you'd get
all
a lot
for
of
it. And you would know. Roka Hanab, who represents the Silicon Valley. Back in a moment. We have a couple more minutes with the congressman. Thanks so much, Congressman.
Thank you.
Both sides, all opinions. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. I don't know if you knew this, but anyone can get the same premium wireless for $15 a month plan that I've been enjoying. It's not just for celebrities. So do like I did and have one of your assistants' assistants switch you to Mint Mobile today. I'm told it's super easy to do at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. Intro rate first 3 months only. Then full price plan options available. Taxes and fees extra. See full terms at mintmobile.com.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, we are back. Congressman Ro Khanna is here. He is 3,000 miles away from home. And Congressman, I thought about you too as things slowly changed. In 2017, we were in contact. And everyone was like, what's going on with Russia? Is he really elected president? And all this going back, it was just chaos. And now that he's officially, and then after 2020, the controversy with the election. But now in 2024, no one doubts the results of the election. This is my biggest surprise. That David Sachs, that Mark Zuckerberg, that Elon Musk, guys that were known for the Democrats, Silicon Valley, cutting edge, want nothing to do with Trump and Republicans who are recalcitrant and reactionary. How did Democrats, at least for now, lose Silicon Valley and the next generation, which is AI?
We made a huge mistake. Look, when I was at Trump's inauguration, I didn't know whether I was back at home in my district or in D.C.
Because Jeff Bezos was there, too.
Sundar Pichai from Google. I mean, they all were there. Elon, these are people I've known for 15 years. Many of them supported Bill Clinton. Many of them supported Barack Obama. The challenge is, like me, I'm a pro-business progressive. You have to celebrate entrepreneurship, innovation, technology, wealth generation in this country. And we lost the plot. I mean, with Elon, we didn't invite him to an electric vehicle summit when the guy really revolutionized electric vehicles. And I
did. Did you say it at the time?
I said it at the time. I said it over and over and over again. And I've, you know, Elon and I go back and forth. He called me a dick on Twitter. Then he thanked me for saying we shouldn't burn Tesla cars. So I call him out. But whether you like him or not, how can you deny that he founded the electric vehicle revolution in the United States? And so it's not even – look, I've supported Medicare for All. I support taxing them at higher rates. But I believe that they've contributed innovation and technology, and that's a good thing for America. And somehow the Democratic Party became the party that was anti-technology, and that was a mistake. We can win them back, but we should be a – pro-entrepreneurship, pro-innovation party.
Why do you think Elon Musk is doing what he's doing?
Look,
why do you think he's helping Trump to the degree he's doing it?
I think he is someone who, when he has a mission, is fully dedicated to it. And I think he fundamentally believes that there's waste and fraud in government. My problem with him is that he's doing it without a consultation of Congress or other people. And you may say, well, you know, so what? But that's what separates us from every other nation in the world, is that we have a messy democracy. We have checks and balances. We look at the Constitution, and it prevents us from making mistakes. I mean, he's made a number of mistakes by his own admission. And that's when you have more people in the room, that's a check on that.
But do you think that speed matters?
I do think speed matters, but I think that we're capable of having speed and constitutional action. So, you know, I think he could have done both. We initially had said, come meet with 25 Democrats when Vivek was there as well. You know, they didn't. That never ended up happening. But I think if he came to the committees and said, look, here's what I want to do. And we said, look, OK, but don't fire the veterans that have gone to Iraq and Afghanistan. Don't close Social Security offices. There could be some dialogue. He'd actually have more support.
But you also see that Republicans are also suffering because they go to town halls, and even whether they've said they're paid or not, there are some Republicans legitimately unhappy as he thins out the workforce. But don't you need a dispassionate person who just sees $36 trillion and a goal to get it down?
Yeah, but look, the as you know, the federal workforce is 3% of the total budget. And the Republican House budget, and I came in with Speaker Johnson. I respect him on a personal level. But the Republican budget over the next 10 years adds $28.5 trillion to the deficit. So what Elon is doing is not making a dent in the deficit.
You really think that sadly, we're up against a break. Congressman, you got to go to a meeting, but thanks so much. We'll do this again.
We'll love
to. Have to do it on the phone.
Thank
Congressman
you.
Congressman Ro Khanna.
Thank you.
Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Try Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. Built for WordPress creators by WordPress experts. With 100% uptime, incredible load times, and 24/7 WordPress priority support, your sites will be lightning fast with global reach. And with Bluehost Cloud, your sites can handle surges in traffic no matter how big. Plus, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. Get started now at Bluehost.com.
A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We had serious concerns going into the day that the government violated a federal court order. Today did nothing to dispel it. If anything, it reinforced that our view that the government may very well have violated this order, perhaps even knowingly violated. We will ask the judge to order the government to get these individuals back.
So Lee Gellert, a ACLU attorney who is suing the federal government to allow TDA to stay here and demand that MS-13 remain here, they wanted to stop the flights mid-flight because the judge saw that the ACLU, in his view, was right. And now he's saying that they want to make sure no flights leave. These people who are going to bat for these dregs of the earth, the people who rape and kill and murder and assault and came here to live off our system and torture Americans, they are really lost their way, to be kind. It is insane what's going on. And now judge by 12 o'clock today wants to hear from the Justice Department how they can justify sending these illegal alien criminals to a third country, which is El Salvador. In some cases, some they belong back there. Here's Mike Davis, Article 3 Project and founder. And a lot of people are saying, this is what bothers me. I don't want to ignore judges. I think it's a bad trend. Because this judge is way off base, appointed by Obama, left-wing wife, he's already shown his true colors by giving this guy Kleinendorf, who was the one who made up the Carter Page Pfizer report. He gave him off with a slap on the wrist instead of jail time. You know where he stands. Now he wants to stop Trump. And I understand it. I don't love ignoring judges, but Mike Davis feels this might be one of the times. He's from the Article 3 Project, founder and president, Cut 32.
This D.C. Obama judge is way out over his skis, and he's taken the judiciary off a cliff here. He is ordering the president of the United States during the middle of a national security operation with terrorists, very dangerous terrorists, working with our allies down in El Salvador. This judge thinks he's going to hold a hearing, which could leak out and put this operation in jeopardy, put American lives in jeopardy or not, and our allied lives in jeopardy. And to have him order the president and his team to return two planes full of terrorists to American soil.
Crazy, right? And he went on to say this, Cut 33.
I don't say this lightly. I've never said this. They need to ignore this lawless order. We have our national security on the line. When you have these foreign terrorists who are invading America, they are raping, kidnapping, torturing, and murdering Americans. The president has a constitutional duty as commander-in-chief to get them the hell out of America.
I hear you. Lieutenant Colonel Alan West is with us now. He's also a law and order guy, Dallas County Republican Party chair, American Constitutional Rights Union Executive Director. Colonel, your thoughts about what Davis is saying and what we saw almost be stopped by a judge over the weekend.
No, I absolutely agree with what Mr. Davis said. It's great to be with you, Brian. And look, I understand Marbury versus Madison, you know, which gave, you know, the judicial review. But this is a, you know, judge that is really, like you said, gotten out over his skis. And he is trying to inject himself into one of the constitutional duties of the president of the United States as commander in chief. You have declared this organization as a terrorist organization, full stop. And that means that this organization does not have any rights to be here in the United States of America. They entered this country illegally, which means that they committed a crime. And then on top of that, they're committing additional crimes against the American people. That would be just the same as saying you can't send Al-Qaeda out of the United States of America. You cannot send ISIS out of the United States of America. You have to keep them here, and the president does not have a right to prosecute against them. And when you look at the Alien Enemies Act of 1798, There are two very important words. They are predatory incursions. These people came across the border of the United States of America as predators, and they have come in as an invasion, as an incursion into this country, and they are targeting American citizens, legal law-abiding citizens. So, yes, this is one of those cases where I think Donald Trump looks at this judge and says, you go take a nice hot cup or shut the hell up. We're going to continue to do what is right. And this is common sense. I mean, this is the reason why the Democrats have, as you all have been reporting, a 27% to 29% approval rating, because they're, you know, siding with a judge that says you got to bring back criminal illegal immigrants that are murderers and rapists.
Or they're siding with a so-called 31-year-old graduate student who's leading anti-Hamas, anti-Semitic riots at Columbia University and has got international ties. And let me ask some, Colonel, how many people do you know with basically 100 averages coming out of high school between your kids and your grandkids and can't get into an Ivy League school? This guy from Syria goes to London working at a foundation for freedom in the Arab world, gets into Columbia, and he gets a graduate degree while sparking riots that have two janitors on the cover of the New York Post today saying they were assaulted and kept against their will. And the university sided against them.
Yeah, so here's an individual, and Marco Rubio said it great. If this individual, when he was applying for a student visa, had said that, you know, I support Hamas, I believe in terrorist actions, I will come to your country to incite violence and to support a terrorist organization, we would have denied him the entry into this country. He is not a citizen. He is a guest in this country. And there are ramifications and consequences to what he is doing. And again, how is it that the progressive socialist left are siding with individuals who, you know, are supporting an organization? Number one, Hamas is a terrorist organization. Number two, they're the governing authority of Gaza. And number three, they killed Americans and they have Americans as hostage. How are we supposed to sit back here and say that, that's reasonable, that's rational? It is not. So this individual does not deserve to stay in the United States of America.
All right, back to the 261 TDA and MS-13 who was sent to El Salvador. I want to find out who these groups are. So it's called Democracy Forward, helping the ACLU represent the illegal aliens suing the Trump administration. Guess who supports Democracy Forward? The Soros Network, the Open Society Network, run by George Soros and his renegade son, Alexander Soros, is probably worse than him. For example, in 2023, the Open Society awarded Color of Change $3 million in grants, giving the group $1.5 million in funding from 2018 to 2019. They're also doing the same thing. And what I find stunned is our system is not working. Get this. These injunctions that are stopping Trump, whether it's the two cases we're discussing or others down the line, there's been 64 injunctions facing Trump. All right, so what does that mean? Let's put it in perspective. There's been a total of 127 injunctions since 1963. And 64 in 2 months on Trump? There were 32 injunctions issued by Bush, Obama, and Biden collectively. And 64 for Trump? Please don't tell me that these courts are not playing politics, because they absolutely are.
Well, they are playing politics, and again, they are trying to usurp the authority of the executive branch. But let's look at this very reasonably and very logically. What George Soros and his son and his network are doing is against U.S. statute and code. They are aiding and abetting a terrorist organization. That's bottom line. These are not people that are citizens of the United States of America. Basically, what they're saying is that we are going to work with the ACLU. We're going to provide legal services and funding for a terrorist organization. What's the difference if they are becoming the legal arm of a terrorist organization than for them to just be donating straight to that terrorist organization? Could be ISIS, could be al-Shabaab, could be the Houthis. But in this case, it's Trinidad-Aragua, and it is someone that is a Hamas supporter. So really and truthfully to me, George Soros and all his accounts should be frozen, and he should be brought up on charges of violating U.S. statute and code of providing material support and comfort to an enemy of the United States of America, a terrorist organization. That's what Trinidad-Aragua is. And I think this is a case, pretty hands down to me, if a dumb guy like me that used to jump out of airplanes for 22 years can figure that out, I'm sure the Attorney General of the United States of America can figure that out.
So here's what Michael Waltz told Laura Ingraham yesterday, cut 29.
That video is deterrence, and that sends a message to everybody out there who would, one, behave like they do, two, treat their victims like they do, but three, come into the United States and treat American citizens like they do. This is the fate that you will face, not what we saw under the Biden administration.
Right, and that's key. Mm-hmm. Let people know, I don't care how evil you are, they don't want to end up in a prison in El Salvador. That's what's going to happen, because this guy's serious. It's show the border is down to a trickle. He's starting to build the wall again this week. He handed out a contract. So 7 miles is going to begin to be constructed. Now, when he gets the bill done in April, he's going to reconfigure all that. There's going to be more border money in it. And I heard it's really put a bounce in everybody's step at the border. It has lifted morale. They suddenly don't feel overwhelmed. They can do their job with pride again.
Well, think about it, Brian. How long ago was it that we saw single military-age males bum rush the American border and basically stampede uniformed members of our military, our National Guard troops? You're not going to see those videos anymore. But what videos are you seeing? You're seeing the videos of criminal illegal immigrants being deported out of the United States of America in El Salvador and treated as they should be. Think about those optics, complete different optics, and what that message sends. So, yes, again, coming back to what we said, how is it that anybody on the left, the Democrat Party, can side with the video showing the bum rushing of our border instead of showing these criminals being taken out of the United States?
Leslie, I want to talk about what's going on in the Democratic Party. I've never seen anything like it. We just had Ro Khanna on, and I go, I watch every Sunday show every week. I think it really helps me do this show. I need to watch other channels. I have no interest in staying in a bubble. It doesn't work for the show. It doesn't work for me personally. And plus, I always think there's stuff to learn. So even if you find out how twisted people are, I think a lot of times you watch a Democrat hop on our channel and they have no idea how out of left field and out of the mainstream their ideas are on. Case in point, Don Lemon. He's sitting down with Bill Maher. To me, I don't know why people care so much about him, but he's trending on Twitter. And I'm thinking, well, okay, what's going on here? Listen to what he says. Cut 40.
I think there can be sincere Republicans.
But you can't be a sincere black Republican.
I don't think that you can be a rational MAGA, be black and be a rational MAGA person. I think you can be black and be a Republican.
I think they would find that very insulting.
Well, I mean, the truth is often insulting.
Are you insulted?
No, look, I don't give this guy any credibility, and I am offended by what he said. But again, when you're stuck on stupid like Don Lemon is, I mean, I expect him to say insidious and asinine things like that. Look, what's happening in the Democrat Party is that Donald Trump has broken them. And as Napoleon once said, never interfere with your enemy when he's in the process of destroying himself. We have never seen Democrats publicly fight like they are doing right now. And that's because they don't have a message. They don't have a leader. They don't have a direction. Donald Trump needs to continue on. And this has all happened in what, less than 60 days that we see this apoplectic meltdown of the left where they're going out and burning Teslas when we were told that they were going to mandate us to buy electric vehicles. This is a party that is rudderless, but we have to be very careful. They will always resort to violence as the last thing.
So I was always giving Senator Kelly, who's an astronaut and a colonel in the military, I always give him deference. I always thought he might be the one who just can't go along with this party lunacy, the left-wing craziness that we've seen, to be more like Joe Manchin, but I've given up. Now he comes out cursing on camera, saying, I feel sickened that I'm driving a Tesla. I'm trading it in. And then he comes out and buys a Tahoe, drives on gas. So this left-wing Democrat, who everyone says gas cars are the worst, they're going to ban them in California and in Massachusetts. This guy goes and buys a Tahoe that gets 12 miles to the gallon. I mean, does he even know what he's even saying? And then this week, we're watching the collapse of everyone turning on Chuck Schumer. I mean, Chuck Schumer had no choice. He was going to either shut down the government or he was going to tell these eight people they could vote for the continuing resolution. And yet every Democrat turned on him. I am not a Chuck Schumer fan, but he did not have an option.
No, he was in an untenable position. And, you know, the irrational nature of the Democrats played out with them now attacking him over the CR. You know, he said it very well. If all of a sudden we go out and we furlough people in the federal government, but yet we say these are the essential people that need to stay, you just did DOGE's work for them. You just said that here's a bunch of people that are not essential. So the question is, well, then why should they be in the federal government?
He would have cut them. The whole government, yep.
And so for them to not understand that, that just shows how lost they are. And again, like we said, why they have a 27% approval rating.
All right. So I just wanted to hear John Stewart joined in the fray because we had Hakeem Jeffries refuse to even tell Chuck Schumer that he supports him. We watch Senator Murphy, same thing. We watch the whole squad and your buddy, Congresswoman Crockett of Texas, go off and basically said he should get out of there and he should be done. And AOC should be the new leader. Listen to John Stewart last night.
And for those of you who may have felt like this was a total capitulation, Senator Schumer just felt like this wasn't the moment for Democrats to press their case because Trump is still too strong.
When he went below 40% in the polls, the Republican legislators started working with us. He was at 51. He's now at 48. We're going to keep at it until he goes below 40. When it happens, I am hopeful that our Republican colleagues will resume working with us.
You're going to keep at it. Keep at it. And what? This was it. This was the it that you would have been keeping at. The keeping of the it. It's not the keeping of the it. That's the issue. It's what the it. Don't you have to start it to keep at it? If this wasn't it, then what?
So they don't get, they're just frustrated and flailing, and they think by fighting and yelling, that's effective. It isn't effective. Well, you need a game plan, man.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And see, here's the thing. The Democrats continue to prosecute a case against Donald Trump personally. But what Donald Trump is doing is prosecuting the case for the economic, the energy, the border security, the national security of the American people, and to get rid of all of this woke nonsense that, you know, girls should be threatened by, you know, boys that think they should be playing sports against them or going into the bathrooms against them.
Go get them. Colonel Allen West, thanks so much.
Yes, sir.
1-866-408-7669. Your calls next.
It's Brian Kilmeade.
Workdays can be unpredictable, but your workwear shouldn't be. With a Cintas Apparel Plus program, you'll have freshly laundered garments for everyone on your team delivered every week. Cintas has workwear for just about any job imaginable, with high-performance fabrics and an uncompromising fit that stretches and moves with you. Don't leave looking and feeling good to chance. Visit Cintas.com.
Oh, I'm ready!
And get ready for the workday.
The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, guys. 1-866-408-7669. There is so much going on today. I'm really excited that SpaceX is going to bring that crew down. I know you can't take anything for granted, but it's going to be a no-brainer. They do it so often. It just is an in-your-face, too, to Joe Biden. You sent him up there. Boeing sent him up there. You had an opportunity in the fall to bring them back down. So concerned that it'll make Elon Musk, a supporter of Trump, look good. You left him up there for another 4 months. Absolutely insane, but it shows the approach to the administration. Who even knows if the message even got to Joe Biden? Quick note for everyone listening over in St. Louis, time is running out to get tickets. We just have, there's a handful in the middle and back to the right and left. We're about to sell out the factory on Saturday, so it's going to be with Fox Nation. Go to BrianKilmeade.com for Dayton, Ohio, WHIO listeners. We have some time, but June 21st. So coming up Saturday, St. Louis, the factory, it's going to be great. History and Liberty and Laughs. We win the war in history and tell you about the greatest comeback in political history. I think you know who authored it. Don't miss the Brian Kilmeade Show. Keep it here.
News headquarters in New York City. Always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
All right, from 48th and 6th in Midtown Manhattan, Brian Kilmeade Show coming your way. Thanks so much for listening. This hour, busy, busy hour. Steve Hilton standing by. General H.R. McMaster from California will be joining us on the Russia investigation, excuse me, the Russia, Vladimir Putin, Donald Trump talks about Russia-Ukraine war. We'll also talk about the new action with Hamas is now on the receiving end of the IDF targeted bombings that could have killed countless Hamas fighters. I'll bring you up to date on that in just moments. Josh Krashauer is standing by to bring us up to date on what's happening in Washington and the aftermath, the after effects of the passage of the continuing resolution last week among Democrats. Josh, Fox News Radio political analyst, editor-in-chief of the Jewish Insider, welcome back.
Hey, Brian. Great to be back with you.
First off, let's talk about what's happening over in Israel. This is just posted by the Israeli radar. It says, Israel planned surprise assault last night to maximize Hamas casualties by targeting locations of nighttime Ramadan meals. Nearly the Radar Online reports the IDF and Shin Bet collected precise intel. Air Force mobilized dozens of aircraft to attack numerous Hamas members in parallel. So anybody who says indiscriminate bombing is not getting the right information.
Yeah, look, I mean, we're still getting a lot of the information from those strikes, but we do know that some of the top military and political leaders from Hamas were killed as part of that operation. And typically, the IDF operations are pretty targeted. We know that from Hezbollah and the pager operation and a lot of the pinpoint operations we've seen over the last year. So it does seem like they've gotten a significant number of high-level Hamas targets. Now, what that means, you know, whether that means we're going to now have another extent, you know, whether they're going to be ground troops going in from the IDF, whether this is just a moment or whether this is a phase of a longer war again, we don't know. But it does seem like they went in with a big force and they took out a lot of their top targets.
We also know this, and I'm looking for confirmation on it. We heard for the longest time the reason why the Houthi rebels have been so accurate in shutting down the Red Sea and the Gulf of Aden and the surrounding area is because they've had an Iranian spy ship out there identifying the ships and giving coordinates. And Joe Biden did nothing about it. And now I understand that might have changed. There's a report they were looking to confirm that says the Zagros spy ship that Iran had out there, the most advanced vessel in Iran's navy, was targeted and sunk in the Red Sea.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Have you heard that?
I have not. I'll have to take a look. But we do know that, you know, the Trump administration is aggressively going after the Houthi, not just the rebels, but the leadership. That's one difference from what we saw during the Biden administration. The Trump administration labeled early on the Houthis as a foreign terrorist organization, which is something that the Biden administration was reluctant to do. And obviously, with the you know, over the weekend with the military strikes, including attacking their leadership, it's definitely a sign that they understand the Iranian connections and they're not taking that for granted.
So now we look at Iran, who's basically rebuffed the letter from President Trump and rejects the ultimatum that was given to them. You could either negotiate a nuclear deal or we're going to take other action. And then we warned them over the weekend, the Houthi rebels, this is directed at you, Iran, because we know you're supplying them. And the question is, how much longer is Iran going to be allowed to develop their nuclear program? Sean Parnell was at the Pentagon yesterday. He's the assistant to the Defense Secretary for Public Affairs. Cut five.
Is the U.S. military considering military options for Iran?
I don't want to get out in front of the president or the secretary, but clearly, I mean, I think the president's Truth Social was pretty clear. And I think the meaning is right there for everybody. I mean, I think everybody understands what he means. I don't want to get out in front of the president, but all options are on the table at this time.
So, look, they're only going to have their missile defense down for a certain amount of time. And we know the Houthi rebels have basically shut down those waterways. You got to figure this is coming to a head.
Yeah, I mean, look, Trump has been very clear about how he views Iran. They can pretty much give up their nuclear weapons program through diplomacy, or they will suffer the consequences. And it's been a very muscular rhetoric, a muscular policy. Israel knows that, and the Americans know that Iran is somewhat defenseless. They took several hits during the military operations Israel conducted last year. That has left a lot of their some of their facilities exposed, And this is the moment. I mean, I think there's a window this year to perhaps make a significant dent rolling back the Iranian program and the infrastructure behind the program. We'll see. I mean, there's been some mixed sentiment within the administration, whether they would support an Israeli strike, would work with Israelis to strike Iran's nuclear program. But we're certainly that's certainly a very real possibility, especially given Iran's, you know, just thumbing the nose at Trump and thumbing the nose at any diplomacy to get rid of their nuclear program.
Here's General Jack Keane on what is really at stake. Cut 8.
The two options on the table, the president said what they are. He wants them to dismantle their nuclear enterprise,
right,
likely by a day certain, verified by inspectors, or he would likely support an Israeli-led, U.S.-supported airstrike to take out that nuclear enterprise.
Correct.
That, I think, is where we are. And I think it's well known, if we go the diplomatic route, what will the Iranians do? Delay, 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 and cheat, cheat, cheat. And we don't want to be here 6 months from now or a year from now not having made any progress.
Because they'll make progress. What if they come out, Josh, and say, we have an alliance with Russia and China, and an attack on Iran is an attack on us?
Yeah, yeah. Look, I mean, I think General Keane hit the nail on the head that the Iranian playbook is to delay, delay, and delay. They want to buy time to kind of restore their defenses, to kind of catch up to the setbacks that Israel and Israel posed to them last year during their military operation. So I think the Iranian playbook is to try to buy time. And the big question now, as we've talked about, is when the U.S. would give, you know, would work with the Israelis and give the green light to strike some of these facilities.
All right, let's fast forward and take a look at what's happening domestically with Democrats. I think Cornell Belcher put it, was right on the nose on Meet the Press this weekend. Cut 41.
This problem isn't with the base and the core of the Democrat Party. They are as far underwater with young voters as I've seen. And I work for Obama. I've not seen Democrats this far underwater. Heck, only 49% of African Americans have a positive view of it. So a lot of this is really around the core and these young voters, and that fight that you see happening right now is really sort of encapsulating the problem for Democrats.
That and the civil war that they have raging right now against Senator Schumer and against anyone that wants to acquiesce on with the CR that already passed.
Yeah, so Cornell Belcher made a really important point about young voters no longer being reliably Democratic, even if they tend to be liberal in many ways. And actually, young men, this is one of the most fascinating dynamics from the 2024 election. Young men and young women are it's like young men are from Mars, young women are from Venus. That NBC poll that came out over the weekend found young men actually view Trump fairly favorably, while young women view him very unfavorably. One of the things I found fascinating from that poll, DEI, which is, you know, pretty much was an even split in the NBC poll, but among young women, almost like 70% said DEI programs should continue. Only 30% wanted to eliminate them. Young men more wanted them eliminated, 57%, than 40% wanted to continue them. There is a cultural divide between the Gen Z men and the Gen Z women that I've never seen before in my years of observing and analyzing polling. Culturally, their views on just so many issues are just at odds with each other. The gender gap is historic. And it extends to the views on Trump. And I think what Cornell Belcher was talking about is a lot of young men are big Trump fans, and that is a big difference. Younger voters overall have never been fans of the Republican Party historically. There's this seismic shift among men that has really been a big part of the Trump coalition, and it's actually helped him politically in the first 2 months of his administration.
And we'll see where it goes. Do you think Schumer's in trouble?
So he's not up for re-election until 2028. So I think he has some time to buy on the kind of home state front. But yeah, like he is increasingly being seen by some of his younger colleagues as not up to the job, which is stunning because Schumer, I've covered him for 2 decades. He is seen as one of the master tacticians in politically speaking, at least within the Democratic Party. And for him to be seen as off base and not being in tune with where the Democratic Party is something that's a first. Right. So this is not just a left-right divide or a left-center divide, I should say, but it's also a younger, more confrontational divide. The younger members think that their party should be more aggressive in going after Trump, and Schumer is trying to kind of wait things out and playing his political hand more cautiously and conservatively. That is right. Not just ideological, but it's tactical.
Josh Kreischauer, thanks so much.
Thanks, Brian.
All right. The negotiations, the phone call could be happening right now between Vladimir Putin and President Trump. What should it contain? What are Russia's demands going to be? And should they get anything that they want? I say no. Don't move.
Giving you everything you need to know. You're with Brian Kilmeade. If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Brian Kilmeade here. I'm not going to give Dunkin' Donuts any free advertising. We are on Zoom, so I have a chance to bring in my great guest, three-star General H.R. McMaster, former National Security Advisor under Donald Trump, and he wrote a great best-selling book about those years. He is now an administration with the Hoover Institute Senior Fellow. The name of his book is At War With Ourselves, My Tour of Duty in the Trump White House. General, great to see you. First off, things at hand. The president's going to talk to Vladimir Putin today. You know President Trump. You know Putin. What do you think is going to happen?
Yeah, well, you know, President Trump, as you see, he tries to separate the relationship from the issues at hand. And, you know, and this is how he's getting Putin to the table, trying to get him to the table. But, you know, the problem, Brian, is Putin is, first of all, like the best liar in the world, you know, and Putin has aspirations that go far beyond anything that's in relation to what, you know, what we can give him, you know, that what we can do for him. So I think what's going to happen is Putin is going to try. He's going to try hard to get President Trump to accept something that is unacceptable to the Ukrainians and try to turn the U.S. against Ukraine. I don't think President Trump's going to fall for it, you know, because what he's been doing is he's been making these kind of statements about Putin and about his responsibility for the war that I think a lot of people are upset about. But what he's trying to do is get that initial conversation. The problem, Brian, is, you know, with Russia, every time you make a concession, it doesn't like warm their heart. And then they negotiate in good faith. They just pocket whatever you give them and then make the next unreasonable demand. So I think that's how it's going to play out, sadly. But, hey, it's worth a shot. The president is, I think, motivated by wanting to end the war. But, of course, you know, Russia wants to end the war on terms that are just simply unacceptable to the Ukrainians, the people who they have caused for, you know, so much suffering and inflicted so many losses and rubbled their cities and kidnapped their children. You know, so, you know, hey, you know, war is not the best way of settling differences, but it's the only way to ensure they're not settled for you. And I think what Putin's hoping for is that President Trump will help him get off the mat. I don't think President Trump's going to do it, but, you know, we'll see what happens. Right. It's just the beginning now.
They're posturing themselves as somebody on a roll. They seem to have forced the Ukrainians out of Kursk. And they say they're more on the offensive. Having those couple of days pauses without satellite information and intelligence didn't help Ukraine, but they're back on their feet now getting weapons. I was struck by something you just said to Bill Hemmer on television. 45% of all the casualties that Russia has suffered in the war happened this year.
That's right. That's right. Happened in 2024 and into 2025. And you know, they were taking unsustainable, you know, casualties. Brian, this is what Putin's trying to act like he's in a position of strength. But he's actually profoundly weak. Not only were they suffering during this period of time, about 30,000 casualties a month, but they couldn't generate more manpower. They're having a hard time doing it. They're emptying their prisons and their penal colonies. And then also, you know, economically, he's put his country in like an impossible position. I mean, they're sitting on piles of cash they can't convert. They're spending the equivalent of about 47% of their gross domestic product on defense. It's not sustainable. They've got inflation about 30%, you know, and he's got a labor shortage. I mean, he's got nowhere to go. And so he's in a situation, I think, right now, analogous to what the Ayatollah Khamenei of Iran was in 2015. Barack Obama made the terrible mistake of helping that Ayatollah up off the mat in 2015 with that terrible Iran nuclear deal, and especially the big payments of cash and sanctions relief that went along with it. So, you know, I don't think President Trump's going to make that same mistake. I think he'll see through this, you know, and what he's trying to do is give Putin enough, as much room as he can initially. But sadly, Brian, you know, I mean, I hope it works out, but I don't think it's going to because of Putin's intransigence.
Right. I just don't want President Trump to get, take a bad deal just in order to move on and say, okay, I got peace here, because how this war ends will actually determine when it starts again, if it starts at all. How about this? You know, there's a couple of things that went up. I didn't really read this. The most insightful thought I thought was Bloomberg had a couple of things that Russia was going to deal with. They actually, the other demands I heard that Kyiv put out, that Ukraine will not mobilize soldiers. That's what Russia wants. That Ukraine will not train soldiers. Ukraine will not receive foreign aid. I mean, come on. You put those demands out. You want nothing to do with a ceasefire.
Yeah, it's a surrender document, you know, basically is what they want. And then what they want is they're trying to set a trap for President Trump, which he's not going to step into. Remember, you know, Kim Jong-un tried to string along President Trump until the Hanoi summit. And then President Trump just got up and walked out. Right. And so this is what Putin's trying to do, is get as much as he can from President Trump, because he wants to turn the United States against Ukraine and then use that as a way to separate the United States from Europe. And then break apart Europe. It's important, Brian, to remember, not only is this onslaught against Europe going on in Ukraine, but hey, you know, Putin is waging a shadow war across the continent. He's cut sea cables. He's burning down warehouses. He's, you know, he's engaged in all forms of political subversion, you know, from Romania to Slovakia, you know, to Bulgaria. He wants to turn the Black Sea into a Russian lake. So he has aspirations that go far beyond any concession we can make to him.
Right.
And that's the mistake that multiple presidents have made, two chancellors of Germany have made, you know, the president of France has made. So he's going to try to use the same playbook, Brian. And, you know, let's all hope it doesn't work on President Trump. I don't think it's going to.
And he wants a one-on-one with President Trump in the White House after. Unless he says ceasefire will work out the next 30 days. I don't see how it happens. So let's, General, all the way to use some leverage, $300 billion worth of frozen assets. Hey, Russia, you want that? Agree to a ceasefire. You want that? Just the lines are where they stand. I'm sure they could use that. Real quick, the Houthi rebels, Iran, do you see this linkage? Do you think President Trump's patience is running out on Iran? Do you think Israel's is?
Absolutely. And so now what President Trump is doing is what previous presidents haven't done. I mean, you know, and only President Trump did in his first term, which is act like we know what the return address is for all of this suffering that's going on, not only in Israel, but across the Arab world. I mean, what Iran has done is perpetuated this cycle of sectarian violence and the civil wars there that have created so much suffering. I mean, hell, Brian, half the Syrian population is dead, wounded, or displaced, largely due to Syria.
Absolutely.
And the Houthis, not only are they shooting missiles into the Red Sea, they've been starving people to death and children to death.
General H.R. McMaster, always great. Volatile time. Way to spell it out for us.
Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Look, I absolutely support it. It's long overdue that these files were released. The American public has a right to know, Brian, what our government knows about what happened in the assassination of President Kennedy. So I've been advocating for these to be open for a long time. Finally, we have a president who's willing to do it, and it's fantastic. Look, I spoke to you the year you started on Fox and Friends as a co-host, believe it or not, in 1998. We talked about a transfer of 35,000 documents from this commission to the National Archives. Those are the files that we now want out in the public. I can't believe that 27 years later, we finally found a president who's willing to sign the order to say, get them released.
All right, here you go. That was Jared Posner, who wrote the book Case Closed, saying that Lee Harvey Oswald acted alone. Well, 80,000 pages are going to be released. Nothing redacted reportedly. Will it show that he acted alone? Steve Hilden, I'm sure you don't know. But
and I know everything, Brian. How dare you?
You do not know. You cannot tell me. You served as director of strategy for the British Prime Minister. Does David Cameron know? Because you work for him.
Yeah. I think he'll take a pass on this one. I think he'll say.
Do people care around the world?
That's
or is it just
people.
Here in America?
Of course it's here in America for obvious reasons. Look, the Kennedys are just a kind of amazing. It's an amazing story. And so I think it has captured the imagination of people around the world. So I think there'll be a lot of interest in this. it's a great example of President Trump
trying to be different.
Well, understanding that, actually.
Yeah.
And understanding, you can say it's conspiracy theories and this and that, but there's a real legitimate interest, and there's enough things that don't add up and make sense that actually people do want more information.
All right, so let's talk 3,000 miles away in California. Gavin Newsom started this podcast. He's had three episodes, and it's ranked high in the Apple list, but it's cost him. Tell me if you think this matters to him. He went from a 46% favorability with liberals to 30. They're upset that he's talked to Steve Bannon, Michael Savage, and Charlie Kirk. Should they be?
Well, can I tell you who else is really upset with him? Me. Because guess who's not going to be going on his podcast? Despite us.
You asked.
Because look at this. I've got this great new book coming out next week.
Okay.
It's called Califalia, Reversing the Ruin of America's Worst Run State. Funnily enough, Gavin Newsom doesn't want to debate me on
a lot of people think you're going to put out to launch your own run for the Republican nomination.
Yeah, well, we'll see if that's the next step. But right now, it's amazing to me that he'll have on pretty much all these Republicans, even other Republicans and conservatives called Steve, but he won't have me. In terms of his...
Did you actually reach out
to him?
Yes,
exactly.
They said no.
Yesterday. Yeah, they said sorry. I think the truth is he knows he has a terrible record. He knows that. It's indefensible to anyone who's actually familiar with the details.
Homelessness.
Of what's everything.
Taxes.
No, but here's a way of thinking about it.
Quality of life.
Every single issue you can pick.
Energy.
Everything. Literally, California is like not just doing badly, doing worse than every other state. The highest rate of poverty in the country. Obviously, the highest homelessness. Oh, you mentioned energy. Highest gas prices. Highest electricity prices. I mean, it's unbelievable. We still have power outages. It's just a joke. To your point about how this is working or not for him, I think it's so interesting because the whole point was, I think, for him to show that he's the guy that they should pick in 2028 to take on Republicans because he can reach out and so on. But actually, the favorability among Democrats, that number you cited, that's the whole point of doing this for him. And it's crashing because they don't like the fact that he's inviting these people on who, for them, are the devil. Like Steve Bannon, are you kidding me? He's the devil for Democrats.
I mean, it's extreme right. He's
exactly.
Going extreme right.
Well, and he's not challenging them. That's what they don't like. He's chummy with them and getting along with them and they hate that.
The thing that bothers me, Steve, is that if he really wanted to be moderate, if he opens up and goes, look, these are my policies. There's 10 things you just mentioned. And this is what I intended. This is what went wrong. This is what I'm changing.
Exactly right.
And I'm starting to implement it now in my last year and a half as governor.
Exactly.
And then he says on Steve Bannon, then he goes, my actions and my conversation. But right now, it's all lip service. If I'm seen with a Republican, I'm the type of moderate that can win.
Yes.
But he's not changing any of his beliefs. And actually, that whole thing about him being open to not letting trans men play in women's sports, if you listen to the interview, he quickly backtracks right away.
Yeah, I mean, you absolutely nailed it. He's not some, guy who's thinking about getting involved in politics.
I made a mistake.
He's the actual governor now.
Yeah,
he's the actual governor, right? He can do things. That's why it's a very powerful position. You can do things with it. So exactly to your point on biological men in girls' sports, where he suddenly discovers this is so unfair. That's the word he used. Deeply unfair. Okay, great. If you think it's deeply unfair, why don't you do something about it right now in the California legislature? There are two bills to stop it. One from a guy called Bill Esaley, a good friend of mine, another from a Republican lawmaker, Kate Sanchez. Right, there are bills in the legislature. Has he said anything about whether these bills should be advanced?
How much
whether
money,
he would sign them?
Great point, Steve. And the other thing is, how much money did he put aside? I think $20 million to Trump-proof California?
$50 million.
$50 million.
Right.
So in a state that's running a deficit, $50 million to Trump-proof California to preserve these horrible policies, which have been epic failures, for example, at the border. How
yes.
much money in California's budget goes to illegal aliens to go to college, to get housing, to get all their basic
again,
needs?
We know that. I mean, look, just one aspect of that, healthcare, right? In other states, there's a basic version of Medicaid, which everyone can get. So you know, literally people don't die in the street if there's an emergency.
Too, yeah.
Yeah, but in other states, there's a very basic version of it. In California, it's full coverage for illegal immigrants. That was announced last year. Now, the fund is out of money. Medi-Cal, the California version of Medicaid. So he's just gone to the legislature with two separate requests, one for $3.4 billion, another for, I think it was $2.8 billion, billions of dollars for Medi-Cal, for Medicaid in California, for illegal immigrants. That's nearly $10 billion. Meanwhile, you have Democrats saying, oh, Republicans are cutting Medicaid and people are going to lose their coverage, while in California, the money is going to people who shouldn't be here in the first place.
Right. So, and Ro Khanna was just here 2 hours ago, and he was just talking about different things that he lost Silicon Valley and that California is not doing well. But they did lose Silicon Valley. So that was the liberal bastion. They lost the AI is the new generation of whiz kids. And then you have the old generation of Zuckerberg and Pinchow and Elon Musk.
Mark Andreessen and others.
Yeah, Andreessen. They're all open to Trump. Now, you might say, well, he won. Well, so what? He won last time. They were in and out. Hey, good to meet you. Best of luck, Mr. President. We know you shouldn't have won. Now, this time, they're like, how can we help? We've been exiled for the four previous years.
Yes.
And we're looking to help. So this must give you hope that they might be open to a Republican if they're open to Trump.
Exactly. Well, first of all, Trump got more votes in California than any Republican presidential candidate for over two decades. He got
I didn't realize that.
In San Francisco, he did better than any Republican. The city of San Francisco and the county, better than any Republican, I think, since the 80s, since Reagan.
And what was the number? Do you remember?
Well, the number of votes, this is the interesting point, the number of votes that Trump got, 6.1 million, is actually higher than the number of votes you would need to win in 2026 if the turnout is roughly in line with what we've seen in previous midterms. Right. So the Republican votes are there. And you look at what happened across the board in California. You had 10 counties out of 58 flip from blue to red last time. You had Proposition 36 on crime passed by 70%.
Which is be tougher on crime.
Tougher on crime, reversing Kamala Harris's Prop 47, which legalized crime under $950. Every single county voted for it, including L.A. County.
How would you characterize how California is recovering from the fire?
Well, they're doing nothing. I mean, it's all BS. You have Karen Bass.
Disaster. Biggest disaster in the country.
Literally saying to President Trump's face at that famous round table with that, yeah, we're going to get all the obstacles out of the way. I talked to people there the whole time. Nothing's basically happening. The federal government is doing its part. The EPA, Lee Zeldin, cleaning out the toxic stuff. By the way, the reason there's toxic stuff in those sites, especially in the richer areas, is because it's all the melting batteries from Teslas and the solar panels. So that's one of the reasons that there's a problem there. But, you know, the other thing that makes me laugh about all of that is you have Gavin Newsom saying, in response to the fires, we're going to clear away all the nonsense bureaucracy. That's a quote. The nonsense bureaucracy that slows things down from being built. Well, why don't you clear that away for the whole state? If you think it's nonsense,
right.
Why not do it for everywhere in California?
And it's not working. I have friends out there. They can't get anything done. They need a screen pass in order to dig and to scrape their property, and they can't get that done. Then they're going to compete.
Such bureaucracy.
And what happens is they threaten the construction company. So just because you might be powerful and famous, these construction companies risking their license if they do something that the state or the city is going to come down on. Then they're totally destroyed. So Karen Bass, who's the biggest disaster.
Well, that's why I'm involved in the recall effort for her. There's a recall going on. Look, she's up for re-election at the end of next year. But actually, if all goes well with the recall, and I'm working on that with Nicole Shanahan, you could see her out by the end of this year, and at least you'll have a shot at having a decent mayor to prepare for the Olympics.
She can go to Ghana full time there.
Exactly, she'll love it, and she can just hang out there and not answer questions and have drinks.
Steve,
at the cocktail
if we want to pre-order the book, what do we do?
Amazon.com is a famous bookseller.
California Failure.
No, Califalia. How about that? Look, it's written there.
Shouldn't yell
what do
at
you
me.
Think?
You just yelled at me. You just snapped out. Hey, when we come back, we do a simulcast on FBN. Steve Ilden, thanks so much. Hopefully the next governor of California. Don't move.
Now, the Brian Kilmeade Show joins Fox Business's Varney & Company with Stuart Varney, live on your radio and on Fox Business. Here's Brian Kilmeade.
Welcome back, everyone. Brian Kilmeade just going to finish up this hour. At the back end, after I hang up on FBN, Fox Business Network, I'll be able to squeeze in some calls if you want to get online. We're going to be talking a lot about what's happening in court today by noon. President Trump's administration, Justice Department, they have to come across with reasons and locations and background on all the TDA and MS-13 they want to send over to El Salvador. I'm pretty much outraged by it because if you think about it, what do we care what a judge in Washington says about America's foreign policy and illegal immigrant criminals who we want to send out of here? I mean, it blows me away that Democrats are going to bat for this, and they are. And we'll break now with and we're going to run Stuart Varney. Let's
Brian
listen.
Kill me time. Great to see you, Brian.
What's happening?
Yeah, you're going to get straight to it. The White House has released these pictures of President Trump watching military forces strike Houthi rebel targets in Yemen. The pictures were taken after an apparent round of golf. So what, say I? What's your reaction to all of that?
I love it. I mean, number one, you know, the guy is never off. So he wants to go and kind of relax and go play golf. He's not off. He's followed by three or four carts, Secret Service. He never wants to take off. In fact, his rounds are often with people he's doing business with or senators he's got to work with or congressmen who must make sure they vote with him. So he's never off, and it makes total sense. Hey, we're going to hit him on Saturday. Fine, I'll tie my round around it, put on the headsets, and listen in. Watch. See it. And by the way, I think more significant is what they did. They weren't bombing missile sites. They weren't bombing rocket launchers. They killed between 39 and 53 Houthi higher-ups who have been shutting down the Red Sea, the Gulf of Aden, with their rockets. And I think it's important that this got to be stopped. It's costing us billions of dollars, Ashley, to have to go around South Africa in order to get our goods into Europe.
Yeah, it was long overdue to take care of those guys. Next one for you, though, Brian. The left apparently is outraged. About anything, right? They're outraged at this time about the Trump administration sending more than 200 Tren de Aragua gang members to that mega prison in El Salvador. I want you to listen to what one NBC News correspondent said about it. Listen.
Those planes landed and they got off and they were handed over to the El Salvadorian government, something the president of El Salvador has tweeted about and said, oopsies, too late. This is a real mocking of this order that can't be undone. They have multiple men sleeping on concrete slabs without so much as a mattress or a sheet.
Boo-hoo. What about their victims? You know, these violent gang members and terrorists, Brian, why would you be upset about the way these gang members are being treated?
Clearly, they are not familiar with Jocelyn Nunry. Clearly, they're not familiar with Lake and Riley. Clearly, they're not around anybody that's been raped, beaten, or harassed or forced out of buildings by this Venezuelan prison gang that has taken over and been a presence in 13 cities throughout America. Clearly, they don't fully understand that people are coming here to wreak havoc. They weren't upset when 8 million people came here illegally, many of which were flat-out criminals, but they were upset they're put into prison suits and sent back to El Salvador where they can live a life in solitary. And I think the bigger story, Ashley, is that the group that is suing to make sure that these flights stop, this Democracy Forward working with the ACLU, do you know who's a big supporter of them? George Soros' Open Society, the biggest anti-American billionaire in American history.
All right. We'll get to this one, Brian. Our former MSNBC host Joy Reid claims that her parents knew immediately when they came to America that it wasn't the land of opportunity. Listen.
My father was from the Congo and my mother was from Guyana. And so they were the immigrants who came here on purpose and they got the rude awakening. My mother got the rude awakening like, oh, it's racist here. Tell me this is the land of opportunity, but not for me.
Well, then go back home, I guess. I mean, what do you make of that?
An ungrateful person who just got no sense of how great this country is. This is a woman that whatever her parents came from, she ends up in an Ivy League institution and then on a national network as an anchor. Please tell me where the America is not a land of opportunity is. And then when you're graded on a daily basis, like we are, we get our ratings every day. If we're not getting ratings, we get let go. It's friendly, but that's the way it is. Same in sports. You're not winning, you're not producing, can't keep you in the lineup. That's what happened to her because MSNBC says it's a valuable time slot and you're not very good. So that it doesn't mean America's out of the opportunity. It doesn't guarantee outcomes. It guarantees opportunity. I think she needs to take a deep breath and be thankful for what she has and recalibrate and in this country go learn from it and try to be better next time.
I hope she's listening to you, Brian Kilmeade. Brian, thank you so much as always.
Go get him, Ashley.
All right.
Stay within yourself. All right. Meanwhile, as I promised, I'll be able to get into the phone calls now. Let's go out to John in California, listening on the Fox News Radio app. John, we were just talking California.
That's why I called, Brian. I was listening. I wanted to talk about some of the things to reinforce what Steve was talking about. The electric bills, and people don't understand this, per kilowatt hour, and most houses use about $1,200 a year or a month. It's 45 to 55 cents, depending on the time of day, per kilowatt hour. The rest of the country is at 15, 16 cents. That's triple. Now, if you start electing Democrats in these other states, and you're probably seeing a lot of it in New York, your rates are going to go up because of this. My gas prices, $1.20 more per gallon than the rest of the country average. My insurance has tripled in the last 2 years. Now, these are three things on the top of my head that I can bring up. Besides, one other thing, my mom recently passed away, so I had a lot of dealings with emergency rooms and hospitals. You go in there, I don't know if you watched the show The Pit, that's what it's like. It's a madhouse. These people are getting free medical, and they're clogging up the system here. So those are just some of the examples that I can think off the top of my head of what's going out here in California. Now, you may ask, why am I staying here? Brian, I got my family here, and I'm not going to have politicians force me to live somewhere where I don't want to live.
Listen, John, I'm up against a break, but I would say this. The thing that bothers me most is that all these prices on utilities could go down. If you let insurance brokers actually deal competitively with rates, but they regulate the rates to the point where the insurers pull out entirely if you're lucky enough to have insurance, and they decide no nuclear, they decide no natural gas, they wean off oil, and then tell you, you pay triple the amount because we're living off solar and wind, and we're not drilling offshore anymore. This is self-inflicted problem.
Fox News Radio Studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. We come to you from Midtown Manhattan. We're just a few blocks away from here. One guy threw another guy on, lit another guy on fire the other night. But the good news is they know each other. So fantastic. New York is really doing great. But we are giving you up to the latest on what's happening in Columbia, right uptown, where continued unrest over the apprehension and the detainment of a illegal immigrant, a green card holder who decides to spend most of his time creating unrest on the college campus they graduated from at the age of 31 years old. He's still listed as a student, but a green card holder. We're going to give you the latest on that as his lawyers try to get him free from detainment. So before we get to Benjamin Hall and his brand new book, let's get to the big three.
Number three.
We'll see if Russia will go to a ceasefire unconditionally. I think the president's got options here to apply some real pressure to Russia to get them to comply to an unconditional ceasefire.
That is General Jack Keane, knows as much as anybody in the business. Russia, Ukraine, the talks are going on right now between Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. A lot at stake. I'll talk to Ben about that.
Number two.
President Trump has made it clear Hamas, the Houthis, Iran, all those who seek to terrorize not just Israel, but also the United States of America, will see a price to pay. All hell will break loose.
That is, of course, Caroline Leavitt, the press secretary. The Houthis, Hamas, and Iran. Trump links them all, and the administration reaches a breaking point with over the unrest and targeting of American forces in the region, as the IDF resumes targeted attacks in Gaza.
Number one.
We know that Alvin Bragg dismissed many of those cases of the students last summer in Hamilton Hall who had taken it over and briefly detained some of these janitors. Those cases could have been prosecuted locally and should have been.
Maud Maron, the Manhattan DA candidate, fighting back the two janitors harassed and detained by students over a year ago on the campus of Columbia are fighting back right now. They're on the cover of the New York Post. They want to stand up and push back against my home, Mahmoud Khalif, as well as the student pro-Palestinian maniacs who have taken over and are dominating, who took over Hamilton Hall and are dominating college campuses right here in New York City, whether it's the New School, NYU, or City College. Ben, were you surprised to find out, first off, that in the tunnels with Hamas in Gaza, that the Hamas militants were bragging to the hostages that they have direct links to the students in America?
Well, no, not at all, to be honest. I mean, I think that if you look at some of the groups that have been marching up and down these protests, both in New York as well as in London, you're seeing those links. And I think that, look, Hamas on one level are terrorists, they're brutal terrorists, but they also have a political wing. They have people in Qatar. These people have influence around the world. So you mustn't just think of them as the bad guys underground. You've got to think of them as a bigger organization. They have a lot of money as well. And they will be using some of that to create disturbances here if they can, in Europe if they can. So, look, they are operating mainly in Gaza, but they are also doing their best to destabilize around the world.
So I'm looking at, I got an email this morning and someone turned me on to a post talking about the attacks in Gaza. And people are saying, well, here come the complaints against it about indiscriminate attacks into Gaza killing innocents. And it turns out, according to Israeli radar, which is a dependable source, Israel planned surprise assault last night, maximizes Hamas casualties by targeting locations of nighttime Ramadan meals. These IDF and Shin Bet collected precise intel. Air Force mobilized dozens of aircraft to attack numerous Hamas members in parallel. And then Hamas has said they have 200-300 casualties. So judging by what they did with the pagers, don't you think the IDF is also capable of being just as targeted in Gaza?
Yeah, look, of course they're being targeted. But look, no one can deny that a war is a war and there will always be civilian deaths. Like, we must never deny that. Look, everyone that I speak to would generally say that the person responsible for the civilian deaths are Hamas, that they are the ones who put these civilians in danger. You know, we also gather that the IDF managed to kill the deputy head of Hamas's political organization, effectively their prime minister. So we know they are targeting their leadership. And remember, they've had 2 months during the ceasefire to watch Hamas grow back. We've seen the videos of Hamas moving around Gaza during the ceasefire. They are very active. They are in public. And so you imagine for 2 months, Israel and the IDF have been watching them, have been identifying where they've been, and now they probably have a much greater target list because of the ceasefire, because they've been watching them. So, yeah, they will be targeting their leadership and presumably, hopefully, their tunnels as well.
Who's replenishing their armaments?
You know, I gather there are still some weapons flowing in from Egypt in those tunnels. They also make some of their own weapons. You know, it's long been said that a lot of the aid that was going, the pipes that were used for water, etc., are instead being used to make armaments. But one of the reasons that the Israelis also went in is because they said that Hamas was planning another attack against Israel. They've moved everyone from the east of Gaza further into Gaza because they said they were getting ready to launch an attack. So they are not out of weapons. They still have the capability to do this. Look, Israel is trying its best to stop the weapons going in, but they seem to continue having them.
By the way, you have had so much experience in the region. You were the first that I knew of to interview these ISIS, this emerging terror organization that is now commonplace vernacular, sadly, in the region, although they just took out an ISIS head last weekend. But if the Houthi rebels are going to be targeted, we have to hit their leadership, and it seems we did that over the weekend. And then I see this report, yet unconfirmed, but I sense that it is. This Zagros spy ship, the most advanced vessel in Iran's navy, was targeted and sunk in the Red Sea. The role it played was lining up coordinates and basically allowing the Houthi rebels to use their drones to strike the merchant ships like ours 174 times. We just left it there until now.
No, that ship's been there for years. And, you know, you look at the ships that are being targeted by the Houthis, they are, you know, European and American ships. The Chinese ships, they keep sailing through. And so, you know, these Iranian spy ships are letting the Houthis know which ships to target. And you look at the disruption it's had on global trade. 70% of all, you know, shipping trade has been affected by this because the Iranians are providing the intelligence specifically so the Houthis can target American ships, European ships.
What about the arrogance and the boldness and audacity? Go, yeah, it's my ship. Yeah, I'm doing that. I know it. You know it. highest intelligence experts know it, and they felt impervious, like we'll never hit them.
Well, the Strait of Hormuz has always been a weapon that Iran has used. They've effectively said, if you attack us, we will shut down the Strait of Hormuz and totally stop all shipping. That is still a weapon they have, and so they've always had control over that water. They always think that they have a lot of control over it, and it's one of their great weapons. And I do think if there was ever an attack on Iran, we would see the Strait of Hormuz totally shut. So that would be a big effect for trade, definitely. And if we are talking about enemy ships, you've got to look at all the Russian ships around the world, the Russian ships that are cutting the undersea cables, the Russian spy ships that are sailing up and down the American coast last year. You know, these people, they call the dark ships. They are out there. They turn off their responders and their trackers. And these are weapons that many of these, you know, countries continue to use.
So today, right now, you walked in and said they're talking right now, Vladimir Putin and Donald Trump. It usually goes on for hours. Steve Witkoff talked for 3 hours. I think the other time prior to that was even longer with translation. They're talking to the Zaporizhzhia energy plant. They're talking about dividing up the assets of Ukraine that's already been acquired through an illegal invasion by the Russians. What is your greatest concern about this one-on-one meeting?
I think, look, we've got to go back to the fact that we thought that this was a negotiation for a ceasefire, that there wouldn't really be any discussions about splitting land or giving up power plants in this case, for example. But it appears as if Putin and Russia right now is already trying to get concessions. You heard General Keane early on, you played that soundbite, saying that this is supposed to just be the unconditional ceasefire while you negotiate. Well, what I think may be happening in this meeting, it's been going on for over an hour at this point, is that Russia and Putin are perhaps really pushing to get some concessions at this point. And those concessions will be taken and put in the bag, and they won't necessarily get anything. The US or Ukraine won't get anything in return for that. The greatest fear is that decisions, at least the Ukrainians fear, the greatest fear is that decisions are being taken without them, and that perhaps during this phone call, some land is being given up or it's being divided without Ukraine agreeing to it. And how can you begin a negotiation between sides when only one side, Russia, is participating in it?
And if they come out and say these are our demands, doesn't mean we're accepting them. But it's, you know, in the beginning, sitting down with all three sides is probably not practical. Mm-hmm. Got to do the shuttle diplomacy thing. Eventually get everyone in the same room where they sign off on things. But let's talk about your book and how, and I've asked you this on television today. It's called Resolute, How We Humans Keep Finding Ways to Beat the Toughest Odds. Is it hard? It would be hard for me to look at the Ukraine situation, the war you were covering, where you got injured, where both your legs, your arm, your eye, and you recover against all odds, and not have any anger towards Russia, who clearly was targeting your car?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that Russia are the aggressors here. They definitely invaded a country. You know, that is, in my eyes, incredibly clear. But, you know, my anger isn't going to affect how I, you know, the fact that I want this war to end. And I'm perfectly capable, despite my injuries, of saying we need a negotiation. They have to work towards a settlement. And I think that if you just got incredibly angry and said nothing but they've got to be defeated totally and we won't stop fighting until they do, that doesn't lead to an end in this of this conflict. And so, yeah, look, I write about that in the book, that at some point, no matter how difficult it is, you have to make some concessions. You have to come to the table. And I just think that hopefully that's what will happen.
The only thing difference about this ending would be the international troops that would sit there and be the tripwire. Well, Russia said that's a non-starter, but you can't tell France and Britain what to do.
You know, Putin has made very clear that there are lots of non-starters, all of them. There should be no European peacekeepers in there, that Ukraine should never have a pathway to join NATO at all, that they must not continue to get weapons. The list is incredibly long, and I don't know where they are going to budge, but the Europeans are already saying quite clearly, we are putting together a proposal where 10,000 soldiers from the UK, from France, and we think perhaps from Germany would be peacekeepers. Can you fit that in? Can Russia agree to some kind of a peacekeeping force? If they don't, we go back to 2014 in the Minsk Agreement where they just keep going at it. Unless there are security guarantees and they make Ukraine what they're called a porcupine state. So effectively you arm them so much, you defend them so much that Russia can't attack again in the future, then any peace deal right now is almost a non-starter.
So your first book was the number one bestseller in the country. It's and now this one, Resolute, comes out today. What do you want people to take away from this as opposed to your first?
You know, what was really interesting is that when I wrote the first, I was actually still in hospital when I started to write it. And I thought that the toughest part was going to be that recovery, learning to walk, being in hospital, recovering from the serious injuries. And I actually found it was much tougher when I got home. You know, when you're in hospital, you're surrounded by doctors and physios and therapists, and they build you together, and you have this team, and you've got one goal. But when you take these injuries home and you put added pressure on your family, getting back to your old life, you realize the things you can't do. You realize the way different people interact with you. I found that to be really quite hard. I was struggling with a traumatic brain injury. I talk about some of the flashbacks. I talk about the pain as I kept trying to come off painkillers. And that was done just me and my family. And that is what what happens to so many people, I think, who go through injuries, is that it is difficult when they're home. How do you get through that when you don't have that support anymore? And I've written very clearly about the hard times, the difficult times. And I suppose I've written it because I hope maybe other people can read this book and it can give them influence. Because when it came down to it, all these times were difficult. But at the end of every single one of them, I got through it. I found a way. And not for a second did I ever say, I will find a way through. I always did. And I've just tried to write about my thought process and how I did it.
Understood. Resolute with Benjamin Hall is now out on Fox Nation. Not only is the book out, the special is out. More with Ben in just a moment.
As we talk about community, though, the most important for me is certainly family. And when I think back to that moment after the attack, the first thing when I regained consciousness and put the flames out was think about my wife, Alicia, and my three beautiful daughters at home. And I told myself in that moment that no matter what, no matter how long or how hard, I was getting back to them. And it became the most simple thought. I'm coming home.
You're with Brian Kilmeade. Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
I wanted to remember what it felt like to be on the ground after the attack. That's what I spent the train ride back to Kyiv doing. Closing my eyes, trying to remember the darkest moments. Trying to picture Pierre in front of me. Trying to recall the smell and the sounds, the heat of the attack.
And that is Benjamin Hall, all part of a special Resolute with Benjamin Hall. It's on Fox Nation, available today. And his book is out today, Resolute, How We Humans Keep Finding Ways to Beat the Toughest Odds. And Ben, I also thought it was important to bring up that not only did you go back to Ukraine, you sat down with President Zelensky. And when he looked across at you, you work for an American network with located in Britain. Did he appreciate your sacrifice?
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt about it. Look, he understands both the importance of the media, but he also understands whoever is, you know, out there covering conflict and the risk that they are taking on themselves. So, no, meeting him, he was more of a philosopher than I imagined. You know, you interview so many politicians who just give you straight answers, short answers, but he would talk away and go in tangents and talk about greater Ukraine and the ideas of peace and prosperity versus war and failure. And I was actually amazed at how philosophical he was in person. But certainly when it came to talking about Pierre and Sasha, who died that day, he was certainly incredibly...
But you didn't write this book for the Russia-Ukraine conflict. You wrote it for everybody.
100%.
You wrote it for people that are going through tough times.
Totally. I mean, I don't speak all that much about Ukraine. So I talk about going back to Ukraine. But what I have found is that, look, you may not be injured in the way I've been injured, but at the same time, everyone goes through some sort of traumatic event. Everyone has difficulties, whether that is just financial difficulties, whether that is anxiety or family, all those sort of things. You still got to find a way to get through them. You still have to find a way to stand up and say, you know, I'm not going to let this hold me down. I'm going to find a solution. And that's what I've tried to talk about in the book, all these moments, and not just my moments. I've brought other people into the book. I've brought in a lady, 21 years old, who was taken by Hamas and in the tunnels of Gaza, and her story about how she rebuilt. I've spoken to American veterans about how they've gone through their injuries. And look, there is a similarity in all their stories. When you are knocked down, all these people found ways of building it back up. And everyone's recovery is individual. You have to find what works for you, but you can use various ways that I write about in which you can try and harness resilience.
How have you handled with your family now? So your family's growing, and now you're over here. How are you different with your family?
Well, look, I mean, I now have four daughters. Our latest baby was born 6 months ago. And look, I mean, it's fair to say that family means a lot more to me now than it did before. I'm quite open that I was working, you know, constantly. I was on the road most of the time, and I felt that that was important because I was providing for my family, but I was maybe missing some of their youth. I was away for most of their birthdays. I was never at home any dinner. And all these sort of things I think now I think I was doing it in the wrong order. And so now my priority is being around my family and working side by side with that. So I think that's a lesson I learned. But like my family are absolutely remarkable. My daughters have never let what happened to me knock them down. I think that they are stronger because of it. And we've had conversations that we would never have had at that young age. But when you sit down, you talk about injuries, you talk about death, and you say this is what life can be like, I think they're going to be stronger as a result.
Right. No doubt about it. And when people pick this book up, how is it different than your first? This is more for others, right? And the other one is chronicling what you went through.
Yeah, well, this is still a continuation of my story, to be honest. I mean, and I talk a lot about both covering conflict, but I also talk about the difficult moments. But yes, this is trying to share what happened. And when I wrote the first book, many people reached out to me. You know, I got thousands of messages saying, wow, your story has really inspired me. But how did you do it? You know, what was the way you've done it and how can it help us? And this is an attempt to put that down and inspire those people.
All right, make this book number one, too. Benjamin Hall, congratulations. Pick up Resolute.
The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Hey, we are back, everybody. Just a quick announcement. You know, I'm coming up in St. Louis, going to be at the Factory Saturday night. Few tickets left, BrianKilmeade.com. VIP is my chance to meet with you before the show. And then June 21st, we'll be back with History, Liberty, and Laughs back on stage. Interact with you guys, putting together a great show for Dayton, Ohio, WHIO listeners. BrianKilmeade.com. We're going to be announcing Richmond as well as Dallas shortly. Trey Yinks is going to be joining me as well in a matter of moments from Israel, where the war is back on. Mike, you're in Texas. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how you doing, Brian?
Great. What's on your mind?
This thing going on in Ukraine, they're looking at it from the wrong angle. If you look at the timeline on that whole mess, everything started happening after the Orthodox Church granted autonomy to the Ukrainian Orthodox Church. Kirill turned around and put a prohibition on anybody that's in the Russian Orthodox Church from taking communion from anybody other than Russian Orthodox. And because people were still doing it, he was told that he could only have authority over the churches that were actually in Russia. And 6 months later, Putin decides to invade.
I don't know. I think it's much deeper than that. He's looking for an opportunity. He saw a weakness. America dropped their guard, and he thought he could pull it off, and he did. And now he's paid the price with between 700 and 900,000 casualties. He's cost him millions of dollars, Western isolation, but he feels as though if he stays the course, he'll outlast Ukraine. I don't think it has anything to do with the church. John, WDBO in Orlando. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, Brian. Brian, earlier when you had Alan West on,
yep.
Like so many other people, you know, it just makes your blood boil to hear what these judges are doing.
It's crazy.
These judges are these guys are our fellow citizens, and yet they're doing things to destroy our country. As far as I'm concerned, these are like, you know, enemy agents. These judges, how can they possibly be, wanting these terrorists to come back into our country? Now, my question, and I don't know if you've got an answer for this, but as citizens who hate seeing this happen, it's beyond belief. As citizens, is there anything at all that we can do, whether it's, I don't know, lobbying our congressman or senator or you know, representative? I don't know. How can we as citizens do something to get rid of these men and women who are deliberately destroying our country? And by the way, on a cheerier note, we loved your tie yesterday for St. Patrick's Day.
I had to change it. Lawrence deserves full credit for it, too. He gave it to me. But here, it's Judge James Boasberg, and he decided that we are not allowed to send MS-13 as well as TDA gang members to El Salvador. They want due process. They don't deserve due process, number one. Number two is the judge now today wants these questions answered by our Justice Department. How many planes departed the U.S.? How many people in this category were on each plane? What foreign country or countries did these planes land on? And what did these planes take off to? Couple of things. None of your business, but they got to work through the process unless they're openly going to defy a judge, which I am not for. Work your way up the system. But there's been 64 injunctions to stop Trump leading up to this point since 1960s. There was only 112. But in 2 months with Donald Trump, you got 61. That's how they're trying to stop him, through the courts. And these challenges are coming from the ACLU, financed by organizations that are funded by George Soros, many predominantly. We'll talk about that in a moment. Stay where you are. I want to go out to Trey Yinks right now, our chief foreign correspondent, anchor of author of Black Sunday. Trey, the war's back on in Gaza. What could you tell us about the initial strikes?
Yeah, Brian, a lot of developments overnight. Unexpectedly, the war between Israel and Hamas resumed overnight. The Israelis launched a series of airstrikes across the Gaza Strip, targeting major population centers like Gaza City, Khan Yunis, and Rafah. Local media is reporting hundreds killed. We can't independently verify those numbers, but from the images that we've seen inside the Strip, there are many deaths as a result of these strikes. Now, the Israelis were going after mid-level Hamas commanders, and also they reportedly killed the top spokesman for Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Among those deaths, many civilians who are still sheltering inside the Strip. And at this hour, we do understand the Israelis are going to continue striking Gaza. They say that Hamas, the group in control of the enclave, has been not willing to accept any of the proposals currently on the negotiating table. And so they will continue, they say, to strike Gaza until a deal is reached to get the remaining hostages freed from Hamas captivity.
From what you see, this has been targeted almost as precise as Hezbollah at this time. It looks like they've been going to school during that pause on how these Hamas operatives are moving throughout the area and maybe perhaps where the hostages have emerged from as they led to their release.
Yeah, absolutely. They have had a lot of time, almost 2 months, to pick out a new target bank for the fighter jets that are conducting these strikes. The real concern, though, as you mentioned, the hostages that remain inside Gaza and some of the families of those being held by Hamas are expressing frustration about the war resuming. They understand that this puts the hostages in an incredibly delicate situation, even more delicate than already is. And so as we move forward, we expect a statement later today by the families of some of those still being held inside Gaza, and possibly even some of the hostages that were freed during this second ceasefire agreement that has been in effect for around 2 months, an agreement that would not have happened without the pressure from the Trump administration. But we do know the current negotiations have been stalled because Hamas agreed to release American citizen Edan Alexander and the bodies of Americans that are still being held inside Gaza, but they were not willing to sign on to a proposal put forward by President Trump's Middle East envoy Steve Witkoff that would see 11 living hostages freed from Hamas captivity. And so there's a big disconnect right now between what Hamas and the Israelis are agreeing to, and Israel basically has announced they are done negotiating at this point, and they will continue the war against Hamas no matter what the collateral damage is, because they see this as the only way to pressure the organization into a deal.
So we understand there's roughly 59 hostages remaining, half of which are alive, including one American, Edan Alexander, who we thought was going to be released maybe over the last previous weekend. Now that obviously is on hold. But the Israelis have unfinished business here, regardless of the pace of and the amount of prisoners they got to let out, which is horrific, I believe. They cannot allow Hamas to be the dominant power in the area, and they're not going to leave willingly. So they only got one choice. They have to eliminate him, and they want to live in the shadows.
Yeah, the thing that the Israelis and the Americans agree on is that Hamas cannot rule Gaza in the future. This is the organization that planned and executed the October 7th massacre in the fall of 2023 and has made clear they intend to do so again if given the opportunity. They're also a group that still has thousands of fighters and weapons inside Gaza, as we saw during the hostage releases that took place earlier this year. Hamas was parading through the streets in pickup trucks, remnant to what it looked like on the morning of October 7th. And they still have RPGs and IEDs that they have reportedly been preparing if Israel decides to go back into Gaza on the ground. And that's the other part of this story, is that this morning Israel issued a pretty large evacuation order for all Palestinians living in areas inside Gaza that are close to the border. This is an indication that Israeli ground forces could soon re-enter the Gaza Strip and take the battle to Hamas on the ground. Now, this is an incredibly complex situation for a variety of reasons, but it's also quite dangerous for those Israeli forces. The Israelis were not able to operate in Gaza without casualties of their own. Hundreds of Israeli soldiers were killed in this war before the second ceasefire went into effect. And that is also part of the political pressure that Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will face as he is looking to take this country back into war.
So we have the Houthis who have rocketed Israel before. And you have the Iranians who have had two major hits on Israel, much of which the damage was limited. And last we left off, Iran promises a retort to the last hit Israel did in response to their attack. What role do you think they'll play as the war heats up again in Gaza?
It's a great question, because previously during the Biden administration, Iran was freely firing on Israel two major times, launching huge ballistic missile attacks against this country. We were here reporting live as these missiles were raining down on cities across Israel. They've also been a major supporter to these proxy groups like the Houthis in Yemen and Hezbollah in Lebanon and Hamas and Islamic Jihad inside Gaza and the West Bank. Earlier this week, President Trump issued a pretty clear warning to the Islamic Republic, basically saying, as it relates to the Houthis in Yemen, that if they support the Houthis any further, or if the Houthis continue attacks on American interests in the Middle East, that it is leadership in Tehran that will face the consequences for those attacks. And so certainly the Iranian regime has seen these threats and these warnings from President Trump, and they have to consider them, because President Trump has made clear in the past during his first administration that he's not afraid to target the Iranians directly. Back in January of 2020, President Trump ordered that drone strike that killed top Iranian commander Qasem Soleimani outside of Baghdad's international airport. Soleimani was largely considered untouchable in the region. And the fact that he was killed by the Americans during that time was a message to the regime in Tehran that there are red lines, and if they're crossed, that the president isn't afraid to use military force to address these threats. And so it certainly changes the dynamic of the situation currently in the Middle East, but it also doesn't bring the region any closer to a larger peace settlement. And that's really the big question here, that 17 months into this conflict, there's still no permanent ceasefire agreement to end the war inside Gaza and to stop these proxy groups from operating. And so the most likely outcome, at least in the short term, is that the war inside Gaza continues, that we probably will see future attacks from these proxy organizations, not just against Israel, but even against American forces in the region on aircraft carriers like the USS Harry Truman that's currently in the Red Sea, and one of the many American assets in the region participating in the strikes against the Houthis in Yemen. But the bottom line here is that the war continues and the tension remains high in the Middle East. And then you have this X factor of Iran and the possibility that the Americans and the Israelis will take this window of opportunity to strike Iran directly.
So we understand, too, Hamas plans on attacking the IDF directly in Gaza and maybe in Israel. So there, even though they evidently lost 17,000, they still have enough where they feel they can do that?
Yeah, what was interesting about this war is that even though Israeli forces were fighting on the ground inside Gaza, there were certain areas of the strip that they didn't enter into. Many of these areas in central Gaza, in Nusayr camp and Deir al-Bala in the central part of the enclave, there were concerns that the hostages were being held there, and that also there were so many people that were sheltering in this location, it was going to make it incredibly challenging for ground forces to operate in this area. And that's the part of Gaza where it is believed Hamas has the most structure to the remaining battalions. But as we saw again in these images, Hamas still has thousands of fighters. They still have the ability to conduct internal and external attacks from the Gaza Strip. And so if Israel does go back to war inside Gaza, they know where the focus of the fighting will be in many of these areas of central Gaza. But also Hamas, because these areas were untouched previously other than from the air, they have had the ability to set up where they could conduct ambushes. They have IEDs that are already planted. And you also have a massive civilian population inside Gaza that further complicates the ability to operate there. There are still more than 2 million people living inside the Gaza Strip. And Hamas's fighting force is among the tens of thousands. And so you get a sense of the ratio there of just how many people are there on the battlefield.
Absolutely. So the other thing is how different it must be for Netanyahu, knowing he doesn't have to worry about getting berated by Jake Sullivan or Anthony Blinken or Joe Biden. He's got the full backing of President Trump and the armaments he was promised.
Certainly. And look, the United States released these 2,000-pound bombs that the Americans previously withheld from the Israelis. They withheld them for a variety of reasons, but one had to do with the civilian casualty rate inside Gaza. The Israelis agreed that tens of thousands of Palestinians have been killed. The only caveat that they ask in the reporting of that number is that up to half of them are members of Hamas or Islamic Jihad. But still, we're looking at 20,000 people, roughly, if you were excluding the militants that are participating in this war. And so that's the big concern here, that as the Israelis continue to strike these heavily populated areas, they can call for the evacuation of civilians. But civilians inside Gaza have nowhere to go. They have to stay inside the enclave. And despite these ideas floated by President Trump in the past about temporarily or even permanently removing Palestinians from Gaza, that's not an option for the civilian population. And so people are still sheltering in place. They have nowhere to go. And at this moment, the president has not pressured the Egyptians enough. And the Egyptians are the ones who would have the ability to open that southern crossing in Rafah between Gaza and Egypt to allow for at least the medical evacuation of Palestinians. And look, if there is another at least temporary pause in the fighting, this is likely going to be one of the key agenda items, opening up that crossing to at least allow for the medical evacuation of Palestinian civilians. That will have to be done in coordination with the Israelis. And at this hour, the Israelis have made clear they're not interested in another ceasefire until Hamas shows that they are willing to come to the table in good faith to reach an agreement that would lead to the hostages being freed.
Trey Yanks, our guest, calling from Israel. I'm calling him, actually. So, Trey, the other thing is the hit on the Houthi rebels, it seems to have caught many by surprise, especially the damage. And lastly, on the Houthi rebels, how it relates to Iran. The president's not wasting any time dealing with this menace.
Absolutely. And look, the Houthis previously conducted attacks against Israel and American assets in the region quite freely. I remember last summer being here in Tel Aviv, Israel's second largest city, when a massive explosion rocked the city in the middle of the night. And this was a Houthi drone that was launched from Yemen that came just feet away from hitting the American consulate in Tel Aviv. And it slammed into a very populated area just next to the consulate, killing one person. And that was just one of many attacks that have been conducted by the Houthis. They've fired ballistic missiles at this country, sending millions of people to bomb shelters. They've launched drones at Israel. They have routinely targeted commercial shipping lanes in the Red Sea and American aircraft carriers that are operating in the Middle East. And they've been able to continue doing this. Now, they did stop firing when the ceasefire went into effect, but then they were threatening that if the war in Gaza resumed, they would resume their attacks against American interests and also against Israel. And so President Trump directed Secretary of Defense Pete Hegseth to operate freely against the Houthis in a way that would send a message to this Iran-backed organization that these types of attacks would not be tolerated. And what's really interesting here is that the chain of command has changed in the sense that the Secretary of Defense is now able to give some of the free will to the commanders who are making these decisions to strike the Houthis in real time.
Gotcha.
And this is giving the Americans an advantage in the region.
Trey Yanks, always great. Thanks so much. Stay safe. Back in a moment.
This is the Brian Kilmeade Show. The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade. Sponsored by Prevagen. Prevagen, made for your brain.
They've been waiting for that for decades. Then I said during the campaign I'd do it, and I'm a man of my word. So tomorrow you have the JFK files. What time will they be released?
Tomorrow afternoon, sir.
Tomorrow afternoon?
Yes.
Okay.
Have you seen what's in the files? Have you read them?
I've heard about them.
What's anything right? Interesting?
It's going to be very interesting.
Well, we'll see. 80,000 pages. I don't even know what 80,000 pages looks like. If someone handed me 80,000 pages and say, here, we will find out who killed JFK, and it's maybe is or is not Ilya Oswald, I'd be into it, but it's going to take you a long time, man. I don't unless you AI it or something. Look for something besides Jack Ruby and Lee Harvey Oswald. Think mob, think Castro. I don't know. We'll find out soon.
Fun.
Fox News Audio presents the Fox Nation Investigates podcast, Evil Next Door, exploring the life and crimes of five serial predators from across the United States. Listen and follow now at foxtruecrime.com or wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.